Welcome to the Planning Commission. Today is Thursday, February 26, 2015, and the time is about 7:05. We have several items on our agenda tonight. We have public comment, and we have a public hearing, which will be preliminary plans for Rose Gate and final plans for Lakeview Trail subdivision. So we'll have the opportunity to discuss that. We have one person who has signed up. Dan, do you want public comment, or do you want it under specifically under the public plan? You want to be under the public hearings? Okay, fine. Since there is nobody that's volunteered or desires to talk during the public comment, we will close that portion of our meeting and move on to our public hearing. Tonight, the public hearing is on the preliminary plans for Rose Gate at Cedar Hills Development, which is the property across from Walmart. And then the final plans for the Lakeview Trail subdivision, which those who do not know, I guess if you would go to the Stake Center up here on Cedar Hills Boulevard and look straight up the hill, there's approximately 23 lots that'll be building, or 23 building sites that will be built in there. So that should give you an idea what we're talking about there. So Mr. Zapala, if you would like to come forward and make a comment, please limit to 3 minutes.
My name is Daniel Zapala. I live at 1034 North Cottonwood Drive, and I want to preface my remarks by saying that I am just one council member, so my remarks don't represent the feelings of the council as a whole. They're based mainly on feedback that I've had from residents who've talked to me. And I want to make 3 points, and I think I can do it in less than 3 minutes. Point number one is that I am thankful that the developer has lowered the building to 3 stories. I think that's part of what residents want. But I want to also note that the development guidelines, the design guidelines, say that we have a preference for 2 stories. That's point number one. Point number two is the developer has reduced the building itself to be within the appropriate sub-district that is zoned for assisted living. But there's quite a bit of parking that building would use that is in a different district, sub-district. And that area of the sub-district ought to be used for higher purposes, for commercial uses. So I would like to see all of the parking as well as the building to fit within the sub-district where it belongs. Number three, if it's going to be assisted living, I really want to see actual assisted living services like meals and social activities being run from within the building, not outsourced. And I lied, I have a fourth point, which is density. For me, the density criteria is that it has to fit with the surrounding neighborhood. The parcel to the east, where the Charleston is built, has a density of 74 residents, approximately, with a bunch of office buildings surrounding it. And that's what we gave higher density in return for having office buildings around it. If you map that over onto the parcel to the west, which is where Rose Gate is being built, it's approximately twice as large. And so I would expect similar density, maybe 150 residents, with some ancillary buildings potentially being used for open space, potentially being used for offices. But that would be the appropriate level of density, not a high density 300-unit building being used primarily for residences without services there. So those are the points I wanted to make. Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody else who has not signed up wish to make a comment? If not, we'll consider the public hearing closed on both Rose Gate and on Lakeview Trail subdivision. We'll move on to the next item in our agenda, and it's approval of minutes from January 22nd and January 29th special meeting. I surmise all of you have had copies of them and have had the opportunity to look at them. Are there any questions or changes?
I have a question or comment, and I think it was the same comment I had last time. I made a motion on the 22nd that a conditional use, a motion for the Beacon Heights Senior Living in regards to some of the parking arrangements, and I don't think the property owner is still meeting the requirements there.
In what regard?
The motion that was made for that conditional use that was passed that evening was that there would be four parking stalls identified as visitor parking.
Okay, we've done that, and one of them is actually a handicap stall in addition, so there's three plus a handicap.
Okay, I think there's three that maybe are identified.
Okay, we'll have him identify, we'll notify him of that.
And then the 45-foot site triangle
that's
on
been
the corners
identified.
Has not yet been identified.
There is a no parking sign on the fence there. We have actually reached out to Andy Tenney last week or the week before, discussing with him, because I've noticed that even with the no parking sign on Valley View Drive, I've never ever seen a car parked on Canyon Road there, along the Canyon Road side. But we have seen cars parked on the Valley View Drive side. So we had him initially put in a no parking sign back where the fence started, which is actually beyond further outside of the site triangle, just because it was a safety concern of people pulling off of Canyon Road. But we've noticed that people are still parking there, so we're actually going to have him put in more no parking signs to help identify that more pronounced area.
On both sides of the road?
Not on both sides of the road. We can't, that other side of the road, Pleasant Grove, we don't have any jurisdiction there. So.
Okay. Yeah, I have seen the no parking sign. And I know it's not, I wasn't part of the motion, but for any kind of just discussion around that night was around, you know, painting the curb red or
right now we're trying to avoid painting the curb red because mm-hmm. the sign would just be a little bit better. If it gets to the point where we can't correct the problems, working with Andy and his current building superintendent, then we will paint the curb red. But as of right now, we're trying to do it with signs. So we think that if we add in another sign where people can see it
right.
More visibly closer to Canyon Road, we'll eliminate that parking issue.
I can't speak to whether the cars that are on the road there pretty much all day are employee cars. The motion was the employees wouldn't be there for 6 hours or longer. I can't speak to whose cars they are, but it's very commonplace that the road is used and the guest parking continues not to be used. I don't know. And that was kind of the concern with the neighborhood at the time, so just trying to remedy that somehow.
I have seen cars parked there, and that's why we've reached out to him, because I've noticed that our efforts right now haven't completely solved the problem, and so we're still working with him. We're not oblivious to that.
Okay.
We need to reach out to their current building superintendent, Mr. Struthers, and get him to enforce the no employee parking on the road, that there are employee parking stalls on site that are off road. So that's something we really need to emphasize with him, and we will get that out to him.
So now that I was critical, I will say something complimentary. They did paint three parking stalls, white lines, but they didn't really identify what their purpose was or use, other than the one handicap stall. But.
All right. Well, maybe we'll take a look out there and see if they need to identify them as visitor parking or employee parking or whatever they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else? I would entertain a motion then for approval of the minutes. For January 22nd, Planning Commission, and January 29th for the special planning meeting. Don't be Deb.
Mr. Chairman, I so move.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second the motion.
A motion has been made and second. Any other comments, questions?
Maybe we can clarify who's voting tonight.
That's the normal ones.
The normal ones?
Yeah.
There's no question around that, so.
The five are. Five.
It's from you down, right?
That's right. Yes. Those in favor of the motion, please indicate by aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion passes. The next scheduled item on here is discussion of the preliminary plans for Rosegate at Cedar Hills Development. Uh, Chandler?
I'm going to be really fast. Right now, Doug Young and Corey Shoup, they're preparing their preliminary packet for submission, so we hope to see that sometime in March. And when we get that, we'll pass that along to the Planning Commission for your review. We're hoping to see that, hope next week, so that we can begin that review process. Corey and Doug have altered their building slightly, and I think that's what Corey wants to go over with you, and their plans for the entire site, so I'm just going to turn the time over to Corey.
Hello again, Corey Shoup, Blue Line Designs, representing Doug Young and Rose Gay. First of all, thank you for having yet another meeting. Quite frankly, Doug and I were just talking about, we wish that there could have been a few more public people here, because our intent was to, again, open ourselves up and ask the questions to the public. This is what we are. Excuse me, throw questions at us again. Let's clarify any questions that the public has. And again, before we submit, try to incorporate their suggestions, because we've done that all along, as you know, and we felt like this would be another great opportunity. Chandler alluded to the fact that we are preparing to make our preliminary site plan application, our submittal. I don't know, for whatever reason, we're just not back away far enough, but I think you all have copies. I see a couple copies, and when I, Chandler, when I turn it to full screen, it cuts the bottom half off for some reason. You can see there on the bottom, it's maybe just backing it up and then focusing it again. But the we've gone back through, as you know, the history here. I always begin with history. We've gone back through the site plan review committee and received some direction. And the plan that you're seeing now is a reflection of the direction that we either did or did not receive. So what you're looking at here, the entrance. What is there? Let me grab it.
Enter here. And now it becomes a square building with a handle on it instead of the big dipper.
This will be easier to see. The configuration of the building has been modified in order to, as we have said all along, stay in within your ordinance, within your guidelines. As you recall, last fall, the building entered here and then jogged, and a portion of the building then came here and down. So the building was overlapping in this area, and then it wrapped around and came back up around. Let me move to the next slide, and you'll understand better why the building takes the configuration that it does. The area that is masked out, this whited out area, is the commercial retail zone, the subzone. And the area that you're seeing the building within is the zone, subzone, that allows congregate care. And as you're aware, back on December 2nd, at the city council meeting, when we were asking for direction from the city council, we provided them with a definition of what congregate care is, when we call congregate care, because the city does not have a definition for congregate care. They do define assisted living. They don't define convalescent home, and they don't define congregate care. And so the evening that we received the votes to proceed forward from the city council as substantially the same as assisted living, we provided them a definition. And I have that because I don't know if you all received that definition. So I brought that.
Thanks, Corey.
Okay. And the at that city council meeting, Daniel was kind enough to read this congregate care facility prior to the vote that they took. And during that vote, determined that according to the definition that we provided and their discussion, that we were substantially the same as an assisted living facility. So with that direction, we moved forward. We asked one other time for clarity from the city council, but were denied the privilege of coming in and getting direction on the building as it was configured back last fall, which overlapped that masked area. For whatever reason, they didn't want to address that, and so we moved forward as we said we would, as we promised we would, complying with your zone. And so the building, in order to be in full compliance, as we promised we would be, no longer overlaps that zone. So there's a lot of great things that happens with this configuration. I think you've seen a version of this. Is that correct? Yeah. The last time we were together?
Mm-hmm. Not this one. Play on it.
The last time, just for my own clarity, last time you saw it, did it overlap into the other subzone?
No.
Okay, so this is very similar to the version that you saw before.
No, it isn't.
It's not?
No.
Then which one did you see last?
Four wings off of this.
We saw that thing.
It did overlap.
Okay, so it is similar in the sense that it didn't overlap. But it had this end here was different. These have the same cutouts.
Yeah, we saw this.
This is like two iterations ago, not last time.
We've seen this one.
Yeah, it's very similar. Right. Regardless, our purpose tonight was to come and get the input of the public, which Daniel Zappala was kind enough to come and give his opinion. And unfortunately, there's no one else. So we're really wanting at this point you as a body, as a planning commission, to again, please tell us if we have stepped out of the box. We are in full compliance as far as we can see. And with the ruling of the city council back on December 2nd, that assisted living and congregate care are substantially the same, or substantially congregate care is substantially the same as assisted living, according to our definition. Our plan is to move forward, and we are confident and feel like the services that we provide are substantially the same. We are not, however, an assisted living facility. At the request of the city, a request of the Planning Commission and of the Site Plan Review Committee, and the mayor himself during that meeting voiced the fact that he would prefer congregate care over assisted living. We have proceeded forward. We feel like we're in complete and total compliance, and not only that, but beyond complete and total compliance. And what would benefit us, since there's no public here to comment, is your comment. Are there any areas at all that you feel like we're not in compliance? While you're thinking about whether or not we're in compliance, I can also run through these. You've seen this one. This was the elevation that we showed before, and we asked if you were concerned at all about this parapet on top. And the preference was that it looks good, that your direction was, let's leave it. It is taller, but it really does help the approach to the building. And let me back up one. One of the other things that we've done is, as part of this, as we combed through your design guidelines, it's very clear in there, and the Charleston does this as well, your design guidelines encourage us to share parking. We can currently park all that we need to within the zone that we have where our building is for our residents, but in an effort to strengthen that bond that you asked for in your design guidelines to share parking, we're proposing that this become a commercial building on the corner that could be used during the daytime hours. We don't need any of this parking. We're not relying on any of this parking. But and I think we talked about this before on weekends, Sundays, when that facility would be closed in the evenings. That's what the facility could look like. But that parking could be shared for visitors and people coming to the to Rose Gate. And so as part of this application, we'll be putting that commercial building in with our application. So, and this, again, this is a conceptual of what the facade of that building could be. We're thinking of complementary type uses, potentially a pharmacy, those types of things that could also go hand in hand and be a great asset to the congregate care facility. Are there other questions? This is the definition. You've got your copy of that. We brought that for the public, but would have been too hard to see anyway. But
shall I go? Or you want to go?
Go ahead.
No, you guys go first. Go ahead.
The question that I would have is, you went over it rather quickly. Do you intend to build that outlying building at the same time that you build the regular facility, the larger facility?
Yes. You're referring to the commercial.
The pad.
The pad, correct. Right here?
Then yes. Your intent would be to lease it?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead, David. You may cover what I need.
I have a few things. We covered this last time. You were here to some extent. So you asked if there's anything.
Yep.
You know, as you well know, you've read it. There are our code has some very specific things and has some vague things that are a little bit open to interpretation. And so I don't know how this body or the council will interpret the following, but it may come up. In public comment, for example, was mention of density. Our code around density is part of it specific and part of it's a little bit open to interpretation and vagueness. So I think there's room there if the council or this body felt that there was inappropriate density. I think that might be grounds that may be open for interpretation. It's not real clear, but if you read a close reading of it, there's aspects of it that are not really clear. That's just the way it's written. The other part is impact. There's language around impact to neighboring residents, minimizing that. So, again, it's open to interpretation. How much is minimizing? Yeah. It's kind of open.
Minimum would be none.
Yeah, just it talks about impact, minimizing the impact to the neighboring.
That's why we never use that word.
Yeah.
Huh? That's why we never use that word in reporting, because it doesn't mean anything.
It's in the design guidelines.
I know it is.
Yeah.
It's not a quantitative.
Right. There's the quantitative things, and there's kind of things that are hard to quantify. And I'm just saying that some people in this body or council may latch upon things that are hard to quantify as a basis for not going forward. I don't know how you address that. But I'm just emphasizing it so that you can emphasize it, I suppose.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
The other question I had is, last time you were here, I asked the question, and you just raised it a moment ago, the parking stalls that exist here, the 297 stalls are adequate for the use needs of the building. And you talked about the sharing of parking space between, we encourage sharing. I just don't know that this outbuilding needs 168 parking stalls to be shared. It seems a little bit that, to the point of public comment made earlier, maybe there is a little bit of wiggle room there for a larger outbuilding, retail building there, or another small pad. I don't know. I'm just saying it's like an awful lot of parking. And I know you emphasized that, on Sundays, everybody would come visit. I don't know, if 168 people would come visit. The store there on the corner may be closed on Sundays, maybe not. Maybe they will. That's a lot of parking stalls for a single shared use day of one day a week. Just something to consider. The other thing is, and last time we talked about, I gave you a list of services so that you would be assisted living versus non-assisted living, and I know you have those. So when you come back for a preliminary, I assume you'll have a list of some services you intend to offer.
Definitely.
And when last time you were here, you used, and maybe some better clarification might be in order. And I kind of described it as, I can't remember the exact words. You said something like, but keep in mind that we're going to do that a little differently. Or keep in mind that people may come and go from the building and they may not always need the services. That was our last time you were here. It seemed like there was a little bit of a vagueness around how you intended to deliver those or how you would deliver them consistently. Or I don't know if you remember that comment or not. But
well, I've listened to those recordings numerous times. You can almost quote them.
I listened to it once since we met.
And I think what you're referring to is our conversation on the services that we provide are substantially the same as an assisted living. But the difference was that in an assisted living, all of those services are covered in your rent, and ours are available to our residents. They're not forced to have a nurse come in and give them medication. Most, if not all, or some, or however many, may not even be on medication at times, but some will be. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the conversation that you might be referring to, is that we make available all of those services. Will all the residents there use them? No.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them. There's a lot of services.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and when it comes time to preliminary, we start making motions and things, and I don't know who will make the motion, whether it's me or somebody else that makes a motion. I was thinking about that, something along the lines of majority of the residents using services, or at least a certain percentage of the residents using services. I mean, if you provide services that nobody wants because you're either really bad at it or it's expensive or whatever it may be, and there's no demand for your services, you're no longer providing services. And so I think that it'd be important that your services are, demand a certain amount of demand.
They're running a business, so they're going to be competitive.
I hope so.
Or they'll go somewhere else, like bankrupt.
I think the key here is the definition that we were basically given approval to move forward on. Mm-hmm. So long as we're providing that, so long as we're who we say we are, then how we get there, I use this example with Doug as we were talking about this days ago. How we get there is, as Don was just saying, that's our business, that's our plan. Mm-hmm. It's like the example I was using with Doug. I don't think you guys monitor where McDonald's order their pickles or their buns from. You just know when you get there and you order a burger, it comes with what you expect on it. That's the same as our residents. When someone comes to a congregate care or they come to Rosegate, there are services they expect. They may not decide to order a burger with a pickle on it. They may say, hold the pickle, but they're still getting a burger.
Yeah.
Or they may decide, I want chicken nuggets today. My point is, and I think this is what Don was going to, let us run the business, and we'll, as the city council approved us, we are who we say we are according to that definition. So
I'm only raising that up because it'll be a conditional use, and it'll be based upon you providing services.
And we do.
At some point
we
in
absolutely
the future,
if you'll have that list.
Not providing services, you're not meeting the conditional use, and you understand that.
Well, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
But that's like saying, if no one goes in and orders pickles on burgers, McDonald's is finally going to quit ordering pickles. But our services we make available, whether they decide to order meals in every single day or whatever example you want, that's the beauty of the congregate care. And in assisted living, you don't have that selection. You're paying for three meals a day. You're paying for all of those services. They amortize it. Yeah. It's a difference in business plan. So.
I have two more questions. And for the record, by the way, I always have the pickle held when I – just for the record.
Thank you for the clarification. So,
I think you mentioned a moment ago that Councilman Zappala read this in council.
He did.
It's just interesting because his public comment a moment ago said that he wanted all the services to be provided on-site. But this statement says they can be provided off-site. So I just was curious what your intention was around that. Or maybe you don't know yet, or
We have services both on and off. Again, it's a business plan.
Right.
And okay. We provided so a number.
So they won't all be off-site. Some will be off and some will.
Definitely.
All right.
Yep.
The last thing, well, maybe not the last thing based on how this conversation goes, but you and I had a discussion last time around the Housing for Older Persons Act of 1995.
Hope and I did go read that, yeah.
Yeah, and we had a little bit of discussion around that. And just so the public, for public record or the public, so they can listen to the following. I just wanted to read the following. Let me get in the right spot. 55 and older communities must survey the residents every 2 years to ensure the 80% threshold requirement is met. Units must be occupied by at least one person 55 and older. Failure to complete and confirm the age status of each resident in the community could, if the threshold fails, impair the ongoing exemption for the 55 and over housing exemption, basically leading to a loss of your certification. I just want the public to realize that that's a possibility. I'm saying it's remote. I think we all agree it's probably remote, but
All of the Rose Gates, there are multiple Rose Gates. All of them are age restricted.
But I mean, it seems like you put that in the conditional use permit if they lose their accreditation.
We can refer to it.
We're happy to do that because we're already complying with it. And yeah. I think our definition even refers to that as far as elderly or something like that, but it doesn't give an actual age, but
yeah.
So, okay.
Great.
Your turn. Okay, I just wanted to go over a couple things that Councilman Zappala brought up. I think he left. So
yeah, he did.
I wish he would have stuck around. Some of the things he brought up, I just wanted to address because since they were brought up, and give the fact that we have discussed all of these issues many, many, many times. And one that he brought up was height. The building's been reduced in height. It's well within the guidelines. The guideline does say two-story is preferred, but I prefer a lot of things I don't get. And, you know, that's the way life is. It does meet the requirements. The other thing is that I really wanted to point out, like Dave was saying, for the public record, the design guidelines are the guidelines that we use for development in the commercial district. They are guidelines, and they are deliberately intended to be flexible.
Right.
And we use that flexibility to get Walmart, which, as I recall, Councilman Zappala, who he wasn't a councilman at the time, was very opposed to and was very critical of. I don't know if it's just development in general, but that's been a great benefit to the city. I think there's still some that would complain about it, but the vast majority of the people that I've talked to in the city are very happy it's here, providing tax revenue. So anyway, the height issue, it's well within the design guidelines. The in-house services, that's your business. I don't see how the city has any business telling you how your services are provided, whether they're in, like you said, we don't tell Chase where they order their envelopes for their stationery from, and I don't see how that's even could be brought up. The retail issue, you know, like I said, the design guidelines are guidelines. If you look at the Walmart, it does not fit within the subzone that it is supposed to be in. It didn't fit. We made allowances to allow the Walmart to be there. The fact that, you know, you guys have done as much accommodating as you can, as you have, I think speaks volumes. And then as far as the density goes, you know, it is what it is, and it's density, but it's confined to an area that was designed to have higher density, the commercial zone. It's not in the middle of a, you know, you're not putting in the middle of a residential neighborhood. It is in the commercial zone, which was zoned that way before any of the adjacent houses were ever built. So I just wanted to address those issues and remind Councilman Zappala that we have discussed all of those issues many times and felt like that those have been dealt with. So that's my comment.
Thanks.
Any other comments? John.
I have a couple. Corey, and this may have been addressed at the January 26th meeting. If so, I apologize. I was unable to attend that night. The east entrance that you've got here onto 4600 West. Mm-hmm. Is that designed to to allow both north and south exiting from that?
It is. In fact, going back to an old comment of Don's, it lines up exactly with the entrance across the street. So when it comes to city engineering, which we'll be doing a review, that will be one of the critical points that they would check. And so in our design, we specifically located it there to be in compliance with your ordinances. So yes, it is designed for right in, right out, and it mirrors just like you would do any intersection across from the street, from the businesses to the
okay, and
east.
Then traffic study associated with that, now that we've moved this off of Cedar Hills Drive,
yeah,
it's going to change some traffic flow through this residential neighborhood.
It potentially could, and our traffic study will be updated if it's not already. He's talking. I was going to ask if he knows. Ryan Hales is our traffic study or our traffic engineer. He's one of the three major ones in the state, so it'll be updated. I think it's already updated. That's my recollection, but yes.
Okay, certainly we'll want to see that before.
Well, and to the point of impact, not to distract you from your other comments, but it's a little weird for us to hear that potentially this might be a traffic impact considered negative, yet in the same sentence they'll say we'd rather have commercial, which will generate 1,000 times more traffic impact to this area. Then would, okay, now 1,000 times, I haven't done the math, I'm being facetious.
Several times.
It will have,
more than.
Oh, significantly more than. Some of our residents don't drive, some do. We don't need to, according to our studies, our calculations, one car per resident is almost too much. It'll be overparked at that. So it's a tough pill for us to swallow when we hear, yes, and this is going to impact us, but we'd rather have commercials.
Understood. I'm speaking for the residents that live south on 4600. There's already a concern because of the number of school children that cross those roads and enter there.
Well, then I would say that this is a great interim, what's the word I'm looking for? Transitional use to your commercial, rather than that being
straight commercial and
a Lowe's with trucks delivering lumber and large semis coming up and down and deliveries in the night. Yeah. So.
Okay, and then along 4600 and Cedar Hills Drive, I can't tell from this view, it's going to be bermed per the design guidelines.
Yes. It is, and we meet your guidelines right now on the distances and everything. In fact, if you look at the one on the north, right on the corner, Cedar Hills Drive, I think it's 23 feet. Oh, no, sorry, 48 feet. 23 is as narrow as we get, it looks like.
Right, and 50 is all that's required.
Yeah,
right.
It's 48 feet, and it's pretty significant. So it's 125 feet back from the road at that point.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
I wasn't taking good notes, John, but your points were traffic study and what?
The traffic study, just to make sure on the ingress and egress, and then the berming. As the councilman mentioned, I was a little concerned about the height, making sure it was well within the guidelines, but it sounds like it is.
Of the building?
The building height. It's less
it
than
is.
50 feet at mid-break.
It is, and you know from all of the public comment during the meetings, it was said multiple times, 5 stories is just not acceptable, 3 stories we can live with.
Well,
and so that's where we're
3 stories is pretty clearly identified in the guidelines.
Right, and we are 3 stories, with the exception of that parapet that we asked your input on, because
it's not again, living space, though, right?
It's not, but it is beautiful. So.
I approve of the aesthetic. I just want to make sure we're meeting the guidelines.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else? Jeff?
I'd like to follow up question.
Okay.
Along with Craig, I'm disappointed that Daniel chose to leave. Daniel has a way of comparing watermelons and apples. So when he talks about density and compares it against Charleston, his comparison to Rosegate was to the property that it occupies. His comparison to Charleston was the entire frontage there with the dental offices and the other things, which frankly don't relate to their active living or conjugate care. So he's got two different ways of getting at densities. I believe that if he compares them the same way, then he should compare Rosegate to the entire the commercial zone, which is another 9 or 10 acres that you're not addressing, in order to get some sort of a comparative density. So I think that's a fallacy in what was presented. As far as your density is concerned, it's certainly meets our guidelines and will fit well within the space that that you've massaged it into. I like the concept of the outbuilding, as long as you can really direct it towards, and I think it's would be appropriate for anybody who wanted to lease that property, that it relate to that conjugate care. In other words, they have a sort of an audience, and I think that's fine. Other businesses will benefit from that too. If I lived there, I would be at McDonald's every day for lunch. I wouldn't buy your lunch, but but that's just a personal thing. The point is that I don't know whether you've lost contact with the transportation people. You had some conversation with them to bring a bus into that area.
UTA in particular, is
yeah,
that what you're saying?
If that happened, you know, there's going to be a lot of desire to get to the temple there. Probably, and to the hospital, which is just beyond that.
We provide
and probably out to the meadows, so
yeah.
There could be a shuttle or something of that nature. If you can mention that, Charleston has their own truck. Yeah, they do.
And you'll see when we come for preliminary plan application, our list of services also includes transportation.
Transportation,
so yeah.
So I'm not too concerned that.
UTA can be pretty difficult to work with.
But he has a way of being influential just by power.
Well, I think his intentions are good for.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to be critical, but
I did.
I was a little put off by the whole thing. He has his chance in city council to make these comments. And
well, we're glad he showed up. We needed some public comment.
Now, that'll be on the recording, but it won't be in the minutes, will it?
May I ask another question?
You bet.
I know I added my time earlier. I think last time we were here, I think, Chandler, you raised the topic of more a wider, more feet on that south side.
A wider what? I'm sorry?
More
a wider landscaping berth between property line.
Property line to landscaping berth on the south side.
It's called for 15 feet, and that's what's being shown.
Yeah, right. I think they had 10 last time or something like that, or 12 or something like that.
We've adjusted that. We also adjusted the road to the west. Yeah. That was a point of.
I mean, earlier iterations had had you deeding some property to the residents there. In an effort to mitigate some things. I presume that's not something you're interested in doing now? Or
Well, when that was a point of negotiation, that was also when we overlapped into the retail zone.
Mm-hmm.
And with the new configuration, not receiving any direction from the city council on whether or not that was going to be an issue, we've had to reconfigure the building, and that's no longer part of it. Mm-hmm. But it does, like Chandler said, it does meet the code. Our setbacks are far beyond your code, if that's any if that's a point to highlight. Your code allows us to be within 30 feet. On that one end, we're at 99 feet, so we're three times.
Right. There was made mention in earlier discussions about an irrigation ditch of sorts or pipe that resides there.
It's currently there.
So it's which side of the property line is that on?
It's a pipe.
Or
it's
what
a
is
pipe. Buried concrete pipe. Okay, it's buried concrete pipe. And then it goes to a retention pond on the east side.
Yes.
Next to 4600. That would have to be taken into consideration for any improvements. Diverting that water.
But where's that? Is that pipe? Which side of the property line is that on? The residence backyard?
I believe it's actually on the smart property itself.
No, it's residence side.
It's on the residence side.
Because
Is it?
It's about 3 feet in on the residence.
And whose pipe is that?
Belong to? Is the retention basin? The retention basin is on the Smart.
It's on the Smart property.
Who? Whose pipe is that? Who does it belong to?
PG Irrigation.
And is there any easement restrictions around planting trees within a certain distance of that pipe that we're aware of that might impact the ability for them to put trees here? Just wondering.
I don't think the trees would be an issue. My concern would be the fence that's going to go in there. I'm assuming it's going to be a concrete.
It is, and that... Well, let me just
address it. Hi, Doug.
I can just address that. I've talked with Sid Smart on that irrigation pipe, and from my understanding in my communication with him, was that is no longer in use. And so it could be abandoned if we go through the proper channels with the canal company. It sounds like it's something that could be abandoned. The power poles are another thing that... from what I understand, even though the power company thinks they're in use, I don't think it goes anywhere. I think it originally went to a little home that was over there, and they could also be taken down. And so it would be nice to eliminate all that. I think in your CC&Rs, in your subdivision, it restricts you from planting trees on top of that pipe. And so that's why the backyards of all those homes are vacant of trees in general. So those are two things that we'd like to address. Now, with the position of our building, the city code right now is that we have to have 15 feet of open space there. So we were putting 15 feet with a sidewalk down. If the city council allows it for those residents, I would still be happy to deed the residents along there an additional 5 feet. We'd put the sidewalk then against the parking, or we can redirect the sidewalk around through the by the building and on through the facility. So there's some options there. We would really like to work together to make things good and better. We feel like that that there are politically that there are people that are don't want this facility, and I think it's really unfortunate because the building design, everything about it, instead of working together as a team, we have this bipolar going along, which I don't like working under that kind of atmosphere. What I like doing is bringing a facility in like this that we've communicated with the community. We all work together. This is an approved use in this zone. And as soon as everybody gets on board that, yes, we can build this building, then we can look at this overlay zone and everything else. Meanwhile, I've spent a fortune on engineering, redrawing this building, and meeting the requirement. By the time I bring this submittal into you, and I'm submitting a building that, to be honest with you, is a B-plus building in my mind. I had other designs that were much better for this, and we could still have addressed commercial adequately on the ground. It's just... this going on that is very uncomfortable. And so right now, the only option that we have is that we have to live by the letter of the law. And it's really quite unfortunate. And that's my comment. But anyway, on the pipe, I'd love to do that. I'd still love to deed the residents. They've been great to work with there. I mean, this is a public hearing. We've had this kind lady here that's asked us a couple of questions that we're going to email her on. And perhaps there'll be more people out this next week. But I want to say this. There are a lot of sincere people politically here that like this facility, that want to see this facility. It's going to be a wonderful facility for this community, and it's a great service to the community, and you'll find that to be true. And in years to come, just like Walmart, no one wanted that, but everybody shops there, and, you know, it sustained you guys through the tough times. But this is a very warm, welcoming community, and it's a great asset to your community. Thank you.
I would like to just make a comment. I understand what you're trying to do with this building design here, trying to meet all of our criteria and everything and staying within it. Although I am a little disappointed at a square building with a handle on it, which is the way I would describe it. But I guess this is what you're going to have to do. And I look forward to seeing the rest of your findings and everything so that we can pass on it. And I'd like to start that building very quickly.
Well, thank you. We have really appreciated working with you. And while it's been a long, hard process, it has been good. You guys are great. You give us good input. And from our perspective, we are all team members. Doug's going to own this thing, and you're going to own this thing. And it really is an incredible facility that will bring great people to your community. It will generate taxes that otherwise are not being generated. And the kind of residents that will be there are quality people. These are great people, people with incomes and people with a positive impact on your community.
Any other comments?
Real quick, Chairman, just for Corey and Doug. We've had the pleasure of seeing you guys a lot the past year and a half. I just applaud your being comprehensive and being responsive to the community, and look forward to working with you through the process. So, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Just wanted to give a couple of insights. First of all, I know the comment was made that Councilman Zapala has his opportunity to speak during council meeting. Councilman Zapala still is a resident of Cedar Hills. And every resident of Cedar Hills is encouraged to come to public hearing, regardless of whether elected official or not. I hope this body would always recognize that and support that. He was not critical of Walmart. That's not true. I don't think there's anybody on the council who's against development. We just unanimously approved a recent development in the city in the commercial zone. And I just wanted to reiterate that this definition was read during council meeting. Another definition was also read with regards to Trio and Orem, and neither were part of our motion.
But did you give us direction that evening to proceed forward as a congregate care?
Congregate care was saying that it was essentially the same as assisted living, but with no definition attached to it.
Yeah, I was there.
I appreciate that.
It wasn't part of our motion.
That is correct. It was part of the discussion and the clarity of what a congregate care is, however.
Right.
I think that was from one particular council member, yes. So.
This is who we consider ourselves to be. This is who we develop, and this is what we will develop in your community. And we are in total and complete compliance, and we appreciate your help in achieving that.
Thank you. And we'll see you in a month.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next item on our agenda is discussion on water conservation xeriscaping policies.
Make a motion to table.
Oh, yes. We got to do something else. Before we go to that,
did you revise the agenda?
I need somebody to make a motion to table item number 7, the plans for the Lakeview Trail subdivision. They're not quite ready to make their final presentation to us. So we have a motion to table it. That would be great.
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes.
I have a point of order. We had a preliminary public hearing for preliminary approval of Rosegate. And we closed the public hearing. Will there be a subsequent public hearing when they come in with their preliminary plans?
Yes.
There will be a second. Who said yes?
Me. I did.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was like,
sorry.
You tricked me. Again.
Tricky. I had a discussion with, if I can just touch on that real fast, we had a discussion with our city recorder about that today. Now, we have to notice public hearings quite well in advance of the actual meeting. And when we noticed them, we talked about this almost 3 weeks ago. And at that point, we were hoping to get the Blue Line preliminary packet in, and as well as the Lakeview Trails preliminary packet, or the final packet in, where we were hoping to have it in. Neither one of them came in because of some engineering quirks that came in that needed to be adjusted. But we actually noticed the meeting, so we have the meeting, and so any resident that comes, we want to still give them the chance to voice their opinion. That's why we still had the meeting. Now, when we do the preliminary submission for the Blue Line Rosegate development. We will have another public hearing that will give residents another opportunity to view the preliminary documents and come and make a public comment on it.
I guess my I'm still unclear on whether we should have closed the preliminary public hearing or tabled it.
We do.
You can close it, but there's just going to be another one. I don't.
It implies it's done.
Yeah. I thought Chairman Dodge said we were closing.
But we can have as many public hearings as we would like. I mean, we can close this one and reopen it again in March. So closing it doesn't close it in forever. It can be reopened as a new public hearing, which it will be when we actually have the preliminary documentation to support it.
So it's your opinion that we did go ahead with a public hearing?
We did. There's just only one comment. I think
that it
was advertised. It was advertised the way we always advertise things.
Then the discussion I would have expected would be a discussion of the details of the submittal for the
right. So we'll have that discussion. We'll have that.
Surprised me when we didn't have it.
Yeah. But we had noticed the public hearing prior to. So we had to do the public hearing just to give the residents an opportunity to come and voice their opinions, concerns. However, since we do not have the preliminary packet yet, we will be doing another public hearing when we do have that preliminary packet with the traffic study.
It doesn't seem very efficient to me, Chandler.
It's not very efficient. We would much rather have it done once. We don't want to have to do it over and over again. But where we did notice it and we did expect people to come or give them the option to come. Anybody that does come will get the opportunity to speak, whether or not the preliminary packet's been submitted or not. So.
It's the lead time for the notice.
Yeah, but it's only 14 days. Watch my hands. They never leave my arms.
sorry, say it again.
Thank you.
Moving on. Watch Don's hands. They never leave his arms. I can find out where we're at. Anyway, the next item is
discussion on water conservation.
Yeah, discussion on the water conservation xeriscaping policies.
I came mostly because of Lake Council, which is, can you just tell me when that will be up for discussion? Because I'd like to make sure I watch it.
Sorry about that.
The rest of it. That's what I came for.
For which group?
For the Lake View that we came for.
That's what I came for.
Probably next month on this time. Today is what, the
26th.
That'll be the 26th of next month.
It'd be the 26th. I think it's the 22nd.
That's the 26th. It's the same as
is it the same?
February.
Yeah, it's 28 days.
March 26th.
Uh-huh.
7 o'clock. Yes. Here.
Yep, once a month.
So if Rose Gate comes again, it would be
right. A month from now.
Mm-hmm. Would be the same.
And apparently I shouldn't sign up for public hearing to say something.
Right.
Discussion like I'm having right now. It's allowed after the public hearing part.
Right.
Is that correct?
Just get here early enough to sign up and speak at the beginning, you know, so you can be here for the public comment part.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for coming. Okay, Chandler.
All right. So what we're going to have tonight is a discussion on xeriscaping. And the reason it's here before the Planning Commission is that it does fall under Title 10 of our code, which is a planning and land use issue, which means that any code change would have to come to the Planning Commission, would have to have a public hearing, and then go through the City Council. We do currently allow xeriscaping. Let me back up. I hope most of you noticed the city's efforts last summer to inform residents of the water issues that the city faces, especially with pressurized irrigation. We went through, we had multiple We reached out to the residents in multiple ways that we hadn't in the past, through Twitter, through Facebook. We had signs posted, really annoying signs posted all throughout the city showing a speed dial and how much water we were using. And if you noticed, the dials didn't move, it was because we always use too much water. But in an effort to encourage, I guess, wiser stewardship or better use of the city's water resource, the city council has met with staff and expressed a desire to expand our xeriscaping code. Currently, our xeriscaping code is one small paragraph, and if I can quickly read it, you'll see that it's pretty inadequate.
Where is it?
10? It's 10.5.27. It says, under definitions, under section C, it says the term landscaping shall mean and include the installation of any combination of turf, planter beds, gardens, trees, and shrubs, statuary, boulders, rock areas, and other customary landscape features that occupy the unpaved portion of the front yard area. And then section 2 says, xeriscape permitted. Nothing in this section shall be construed to prohibit the use of drought-tolerant vegetation, xeriscape, and non-vegetative materials, provided, however, failure of an owner to install and maintain landscaping within the front yard area under the guise that the vegetation and bare ground that occur naturally on the site constitute xeriscaping shall not qualify as conforming with the provisions of this section. So really our xeriscaping code says you can do it, but don't leave your lawn as native and say that that's xeriscaping. So we what staff saw was that it's a little inadequate. When we started looking at what other cities were doing with their xeriscaping, this was included in your packet, I believe. It's a two-page document typed up, kind of a summary of some other cities' codes.
It is.
It was?
Did you get it?
Yeah, I did.
So we went through and looked at a lot of other cities' codes when it came to xeriscaping and what they permitted and what... And actually, our current code is there at the top of that for your reference. We looked at Draper, Lehigh, Eagle Mountain, Mapleton, and found that some of the things that we thought that needed to be addressed with our code were... Many of the other cities actually have a requirement that any xeriscaping plan be done by a landscape architect and stamped as such, and using the plants from the state, using drought-tolerant plants as listed by the Utah Native Plant Society. I'm not sure what those are, but they apparently have a list there. Planting and use of drip trickle system irrigations to conserve water, which we feel would be mandatory if you're going to do xeriscaping, because if you're going to install a normal sprinkler system and then put rocks on it and just throw rocks on your water, it really defeats the purpose of having xeriscaping to begin with. Using mulch in planting areas to reduce weed growth. In Lehigh, you can see that at least 50% of the xeriscape area must contain plants, trees, and shrubs. That same 50% provision is actually 30% in Mapleton, so I think that could be a good discussion. Anyway, I hope you had a chance to read that. And then we have this for you. I wanted to show.
Just take one and pass it down.
You can see it's just a series of pictures of good xeriscaping, landscape that's been xeriscaped well versus landscape that's been xeriscaped rather poorly. In the initial pictures, you see the use of rocks, plants, mulch to kind of naturally beautify the ground while at the same time limiting the water that's needed. And at the very end, you see seas of rock and seas of just bark. So there's a good way to do it and there's a bad way to do it. And I think the good way to do it is when you involve a landscape architect. What are your thoughts on this? I'd like to get some direction from you, because what the plan is we'd like to come back next month with actual code and a public hearing and take that to the city council so that when the spring comes, we can actually have residents that may want to do this and give them proper direction.
One thing that caught my attention was, I think was a Provo that had the requirement for a landscape architect.
Yeah.
Eagle Mountain as well.
Yeah, I don't like that idea.
Me too.
I mean, other than supporting the landscape architect industry, I don't see what merit there is for it. I mean, people should be able to, they own the property. They, you know, as long as they follow the guidelines, what we define as zero scape, they shouldn't have to hire.
Well, the idea behind that, and let me just back up, is to prevent people just throwing rocks all over their property. We don't want to see these bad examples, really. If it's going to be zero scape, we don't want it to look like native hillside. We want it to look like a maintained front yard that was deliberately planned that way.
So define what that means, but don't require that they get an architect to tell them what to do.
I agree with the commissioner. It's I also think that it wouldn't be unreasonable to have at least a sketch of the landscaping submitted to the city so that they have some way of responding to these acres of gray rock. We have a home in our area that that has a lot of rock in the front and no planting. Now, on the other hand, my house is xeriscaped because I don't have any places that's not vertical, except for a little strip in the back, and it's not as in view anyway. So, and I'm not. Well, I've been dealing with xeriscape plans since I was a planning commissioner in southern Utah. They have a severe water problem down there. I think we do too. And any of our ordinances that require grass, and there are a lot. I know our CC&Rs require grass, and I told them I would get a piece of turf made out of old tennis shoes, and that would be my grass. But to require grass is absurd. It takes 5 feet of water for a foot of grass.
Well, about 50% of homes' water use, and this isn't unique to Cedar Hills, but about 50% of the homes' water use is for landscaping.
And it goes down the drain, or it runs under our church.
So really, we're trying to reduce that number, but at the same time, keep Cedar Hills a nice community. So,
out of curiosity, where does our PI water come? Is it all well water, or do we have any American Fork River water?
It's conditioned
water. We do get some American Fork River water, but we try to use mostly well water.
Why is that?
I think it's cheaper to pump, and we only have limited shares with American Fork water.
You know what?
We have limited shares. So
is that what is in the
ponds? The pond system, the golf course pond system, is actually part of the irrigation system.
Right.
But that's not gray water that we're using.
It is.
It's unconditioned, but not gray.
So there's the canyon well down by the golf course maintenance shed, which is actually the other direction from what I'm pointing. There's the Cottonwood well, which is down here, and then the Harvey well, which is down by Cedar Ridge Park, or the Heritage Park. Those all pump. Harvey and Cottonwood are both culinary water.
Right.
But they do Canyon Well, the one down on the golf course, actually pumps to pond 10, which is the lower pond down the hill here, which then pumps up to pond 12. Eventually, it makes its way up to the hillside here. So our costs are the electrical costs to actually extract the water from the ground and then shoot it up the hill. And then when you add in that it has to come back down the hill with gravity, and it comes back down so fast that we have to put in the pressure reducing valves, we actually are paying for something that we lose right away. So that's the problem, is the water gets pumped up the hill and then gravity fed down the hill. It's kind of this weird cost that we have to pay.
We're trying to do something
where we reduce the amount of pumping that's necessary, reduce the impact on our system. Because in the summertime, I don't know how many of you were able to go to any of the water conservation town hall meetings or anything they had there, but the city's pressurized irrigation system is running at 100% from April 15th on. It's just the wells are just constantly churning, and if anything goes wrong, our redundancy well, which was Cottonwood well, is no longer a redundancy well. It's needed to keep the current system going. So that well down there was built as a redundancy to offset anything happening to Harvey. But now both of them are required to meet the current demands of the city. So both of them, all of our wells, go full bore all year during the watering season.
We dump all that culinary water into the PI system.
And sometimes we do end up having using up all the PI water and dumping in the culinary water to feed that.
Do we anticipate metering?
It's been discussed.
Water?
It's been discussed.
I know it's been discussed.
It's very expensive.
And a lot of us are concerned about it.
Well.
Is this in lieu, trying to get the people of Cedar Hills to perhaps do some zero-scaping to cut down on the usage of water?
Yeah, we would like to see people cut down on the usage of water. However, and I think I've voiced this opinion, this is my opinion, that the only reason people would do xeriscaping, a lot of people, would be if there's an incentive involved, if there's a reason for them to do that. Because for a lot of people, it would require ripping out their front yard. So, because there's not a whole lot of new development going in. So, and that's something that we've discussed in water conservation meetings. But at the end of the day, what the city is really looking for is ways to reduce the impact on the system, the current system that we have with the wells and the pipes, and also reduce our need for water, reduce what we are required to use. Because right now, with every person shooting water out of their sprinkling systems every day, the actual gallons per use is, I think it was like three times the state limit this year.
Yep.
So the state has a watering schedule that they recommend, and they give you gallons based on your square footage of area that you have for watering, and they give you basically gallons per minute that you need to be using. And our gallons that we've used are actually three times higher than the state. So we're way over, the city water's way over what the state's recommending. So we're trying to bring that more into line with what the state has recommended. And so anything we can do helps.
Chandler, so is the issue, it sounds like the issue is twofold. It's conservation, and then it's wear and tear on the system.
Yes.
I might be the wrong guy to comment on this because I like my lawn very green, like super emerald.
Water doesn't do that.
No, hold on. So, what I wonder though is, I know neighbors and members of the community that don't water correctly, and I know that there have been lots of efforts for education. And I wonder if there are things outside the box. I haven't been involved or know anything about the water conservation committees or anything else, but I wonder if there could be things the city could do to better educate people how to water and how, again.
We'd love to hear them. No,
we did a lot last year.
We really did do a lot last year.
That's why I'm uneducated about what the city's efforts have been. I've seen the meter and those things.
You've seen the meter. It was in, I think it was in every newsletter from April to September. Yeah. We had a news channel come down and actually do a story on the city's efforts. We didn't solicit the story. They just kind of caught wind of it and came down and did their own story. I think the Herald did a story as well. So the city's really, and this was really the first year that we've really reached out. We've had water conservation efforts before, but this was last summer really a focal point of staff's efforts was and council too, because Jenny, you wrote a lot of pieces on.
We sent out that one page flyer to every mm-hmm. household that was just on water conservation.
Yeah.
It was in the State of the City, it's in the newsletter, it's on Facebook, it's on Twitter. We set up a separate website, chwater.org.
Uh-huh. So we really tried to use every point to reach out to residents. Okay, well, we'll use email, we'll use newsletters, we have news media. So if there's an outside the box thing that you can think of that we haven't thought of, I'd love to hear it, because we'll try it.
Like one thing I can bring up, in our neighborhood, we were all Manila water mm-hmm. users until recently, and the Manila water was really cheap.
It was. That's why it's
was
no longer
way
around.
Cheap. And so when Cedar Hills took over the water system, most of my neighbors, I've been on PI since I put my house in, because I figured eventually it was going to have to go that way. So I've been overpaying for years. But most of my neighbors switched over. The problem, we're at the very tail end. You know where I live, down at the very tail end of the system. We don't have pressure most of the time. And I've actually been on the phone with David a few times. I have a pressure gauge that I put on, and a lot of times we'll be less than 30. I mean, I've been down
where I couldn't get a reading on the pressure gauge. And then sometimes we'll be over 100 PSI.
What time of the day were you watering?
Well, I water whenever I have pressure. I go put the pressure gauge on. If I have pressure, then I water.
That's the problem.
I'm just going to say, in my neighborhood, part of the problem is the fact that, like, if you have your sprinkler set to go off at like 2 in the morning, if you look out, you're barely getting any water out.
Yeah.
And so that's
because that's when everybody up above you in the system is watering.
Right. So that's the problem, is we're at the tail end of the system. So if everybody's got their sprinklers on, we don't get any water.
Ideally, if everyone was using it kind of equitably, you would have the highest pressure.
Right. Exactly. Well, when we do, like I said, if it's a big rainy, you know, if you have a long period of rain or something, some people turn off their sprinklers, our pressure will be over. I mean, I think I've read 115 PSI.
So it's really subject to conditions.
Right. But I'm just saying, and during the dry time when everybody's water, and that's the big complaint I've heard in my neighborhood, is we have no pressure, so we just water when we can,
It's not
Brad
ideal.
Said is a silly way to water.
It is silly, because if you find that you only get pressure at 3 in the afternoon, so that's when you water, you lose a high percentage of that to just...
Well, and then another thing, when you talk about the state guidelines, the other problem is some of us living right on the kind of the distal end of this Bonneville Delta, I mean, my soil is just pure silt. I actually did I had some samples run. It's like 95% silt, 5% clay. And so we get no infiltration. You know what I mean? You can run a hose on it and it just runs off. It doesn't infiltrate. But if you go down to the bench, they've got a completely different soil type there. And that's one of the things that I've tried to work on, is amending the soil. But it's tough when you have a 3/4 acre.
That's a lot of soil.
Yard. Yeah, it's a lot of soil to amend.
In cases like that, I've heard of people having to water for 5 minutes and then let it percolate into the ground. Yeah. Water again, percolate, but it's kind of cumbersome. But one of the things, we actually had a water engineer come in and do a system analysis, Hansen, Allen, and Luce, and what they found was that during the night, from once the sun goes down, it's like everyone's sprinklers go on, and you see this, the tank drains, the use just goes way up, and then the next day is still the pumps are running, trying to fill that tank back up in anticipation of the next night's watering. But that's when everyone waters, because that's when you get the most groundwater into your soil.
Well, you're told to water during...
You're told to water during the day, because you don't lose it to evaporation. So
during the night, you mean?
During the night, excuse me.
Basically, what we're trying to do, we have a homeowners association with 183 units. We're probably one of the larger water users within the city. And we're trying to cut that down by an inline system, which controls our water through the moisture in the ground, the rain, the patterns, and everything like that, and it adjusts it. So it's watering and it's raining, it turns off the water. If the moisture in the ground is sufficient, then it doesn't turn on the water. And this is a system which should cut our usage down by about 50%.
That'd be great. So where Councilmember Reese and I have said that the city has reached out on various platforms to try to spread the word of the need to conserve water. This is simply one of the topics, was to encourage people to xeriscape. If your idea of a front yard is not necessarily the deep emerald green, then maybe xeriscaping is not for you. But for the guy that hates mowing his lawn, this could be his solution. So the city wants, what we want to do is present a code that will allow for that, but at the same time give the city give the resident enough flexibility to kind of know where they need to go with it, but at the same time give the city enough flexibility to say, it's got to be a little bit more than just native hillside, and we want it to look nice. So what we've done is we've looked at other cities' codes and said, okay, what if any of this do we want to adopt into our own?
Let me ask a question. Our design guidelines, do they address water conservation? I'm paging through them.
I don't believe they do. I can't recall any section that I've read that does. Landscaping is a big portion of that, though.
It is a huge portion of it, and it's very much about a park-like setting and about this mm-hmm. what I think is much more of a Midwest or East Coast architectural theme of mm-hmm. Colonial type development. We live out here in the West. We live in a mountain desert West. A lot of our commercial developments around the state, xeriscaping is a big part of the landscape plan. That for that reason, I like the idea of involving a landscape architect. I don't think I would encumber a single-family resident mm-hmm. with that requirement.
Okay.
But I wonder if, as a city, if we're setting an example, not just by going out to single-family residents and asking them to do it, but are we as a city doing our part to set an example? And maybe one way to do that is, as we look at these design guidelines, maybe we ought to be addressing this topic in our landscaping code. Some of the ideas that are from the other city codes could be discussed in terms of incorporating them into our design guidelines. I can tell you from my own experience that xeriscaping can be really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
These rock gardens, these much, again, in my opinion, having come from the Midwest, much more appropriate Western-looking plantings in these rock garden landscapes instead of importing landscaping from other parts of the country that I don't, in my own personal opinion, aesthetically don't even belong here. It's disappointing, for instance, I've told more than one individual to drive through the cedars and not see one cedar tree.
I don't believe you can drive through the whole city and see a cedar tree.
Cedar hills and find landscaping that seems to fit here in this mountain desert climate that we live in. Not only does it thrive better, I just think it looks more like where we live.
Right.
And I wonder if we can't address that in what we're doing.
So if two points to that is, let's talk about that in regards to the design guidelines then. Let's have that discussion. And second, the city's taken great efforts to install rain delays on their parks, because some of our parks are still in culinary, but on the ones that are on pressurized irrigation, the big parks, we put on rain delays so that when it did rain, we're not, you know, using that redundant capacity from the system. However,
it's not a criticism. It's
no. But to that point, the city has a lot of strips of land, like park strips down the middle of Cedar Hills Drive would be one, for instance, where you'll see an irrigation system going, and there's not a rain delay on that. So I can't tell you how many calls we got as a city saying, you're asking us to turn off our water, but your water's on. Well, it would take a guy maybe all day to go turn off all of the systems and then turn them all back on again the next day. So it really wasn't worth it. However, if the city had an option, because there's actually code regarding the city streetscapes on section Title 3, I believe it is. It's under parkways. Don't quote me on the 3, but it's there. That dictates how the city is landscaping their park strips. Let's add xeriscaping to that. Let's add that option to the city so that when we do have those park strips and we say, hey, look, we don't want to maintain this section of grass anymore, let's put in some rock garden. Let's make it look nice and put in a drip system. And save water that way. Let's so we're not spraying it out in Cedar Hills Drive. Just give the city that option.
I think part of educating folks about xeriscaping, frankly, the most appealing part of it is just showing them how beautiful it actually can be. I can't say it enough. Some of the most beautiful landscaping out here that I've seen has been these rock garden paradises with beautiful Western type plantings, and if people saw that more instead of expecting what this park-like setting that you find in other parts of the country, I think they'd be more interested in actually incorporating it into their own lots.
So would you suggest some sort of education campaign about xeriscaping?
I don't know. So you can do a showcase, have a showcase xeriscape.
Okay, we'll get you to
on
work
city
on
property, right? City leads and does xeriscaping, and they build a nice thing, and then you have open house or whatever. Show it off. Or newsletter it or whatever.
Isn't that what they've done at the city offices up there?
Yeah. Or is that it's xeriscaped. It's not. There's no turf up there.
It's nothing.
But I don't know that it's that beautiful. I mean, when you're talking about beautiful xeriscaping, I don't think you were talking about the city's office building.
It didn't come to mind.
There's a drip system with some trees and some rocks, but I don't know that the city went to the great lengths of hiring an landscape architect.
No, it makes a difference.
Now, I don't know that was really necessary there, but, you know, somewhere along Cedar Hills Drive, let's say that park strip on the middle of Cedar Hills Drive, let's say the city wanted to xeriscape that. I think that would be something that the city would really make an effort to make it look nice, because that's kind of the main entrance into the city. We've really kind
what of is the roundabout?
For one of the roundabouts, yeah.
Yeah.
Say that again.
One of the roundabouts.
What about the roundabouts?
One of the roundabouts could be.
Yeah. I agree.
Get an LA involved. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, you could showcase it. The roundabout's a great idea because everybody goes past it.
Mm-hmm.
there are big rocks on it, though, but that's really just to prevent people from driving through the middle.
Well, you can get double duty out of that stuff, but that's, again, it can be really good things.
So from the suggestions we found from other people's codes, is there anything that stands out to you? A 30%, like any percentage minimum, requirement?
Minimum of 30. I like the 50 myself.
Where 50% of the yard is still plants?
Yeah, again, you have to qualify that, because I've seen, like I said, beautiful western trees coming up out of rock gardens. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean there has to be grass out to the drip line or something like that. There are ways to develop beautiful landscaping where you still have trees and shrubs in a xeriscaped area.
So if that provision were included in the code, what percentage would you be looking for?
42.
That's very exact and hard to measure.
First of all, I think there's two. If we're going to go towards xeriscaping, there's two things. Number one, we have to define it. Mm-hmm. And number two, we have to figure out how we're going to regulate the implementation of that.
Right.
And I would highly recommend involving a landscape architect, someone from our community, in helping us define. I think we're just throwing darts right now.
We may be. However, I mean, you just said it that people bring in non-native species and plant them and expect them to just adapt to the Utah climate. And now there are lists that the state has put out of plants. Just like they have a noxious weed list, there's plants of drought-tolerant plants. That could be the list that you draw from, or I don't know. That's just me shooting from the hip right now.
It's really a lot more complex than that.
And I'm sure it is.
If we're really gonna define it well, I'd recommend bringing
Does anybody know a landscape architect in the city?
I know a couple, but I don't know if the city's worked with someone.
I don't know if we have. Well, we've worked with our own landscape management team, but
they may know someone too.
We could look into it.
Chandler, to that point, I mean, it's an interesting situation you bring up where, you know, if we're going to ask the residents to do xeriscaping, we want to encourage them to do it. It seems almost punitive to say you have to hire a landscape architect to do this. So the roundabout on this is if the city could hire one and have 10 examples or 8 examples on the website and say, how about this, how about this, how about this, with those lists of plants. We looked into this because we're trying to reduce our water usage on our front yard, and it's not as much the water as much as that we don't want to mow as much. But as we look at it, we see a list of names. We don't know what the plants look like. We don't know how tall they're going to grow. We're kind of a little in the law, you know, in the dark on this. So making it easier is certainly one step. I don't know how
that's
else you
could
incentivize people to do it.
I think the incentives more fall on the city council to determine, okay. Honestly, because I think that when most people talk about incentives, it's usually revolves around money.
Yeah.
And where it becomes a budget issue, so the city council then gets to dictate what the incentives are, I think.
Because most of us already are landscaped. You're saying to us that we should change.
Yeah.
Right. Which is the point landscaping. You made earlier. Yeah. I think it's an important point.
Which point did I make? I've made a lot
about
of points.
It's changing. It's not new. It's changing.
Oh, right. So people would be tearing out their current landscaping. And they'd be tearing out their current irrigation system, too, because I really don't feel like you should get the benefit, any incentive that the council could offer for doing xeriscaping, whether it's a utility bill reduction or whatever it is. If you leave in your current system, there's nothing to say that you can't go plant grass and totally renege on that.
We need to encourage them to, when they replace a bush, to replace a xeriscape type piece of vegetation.
So,
I mean, my bushes die on the average of every 2 years. There's no ground, no dirt there. It's all rock.
Okay.
So I could find some rock plants.
I think you would be opening Pandora's box if you required a certain percentage of this or that, whether it's grass or
I don't know if I want to get into they have,
I think it should
rather
be
than
guideline.
Doing seas of rock, require a certain percentage of the ground to still be covered by plants. I liked that idea because when I saw the pictures of people just laying down some rock, I was like, oh, that's terrible.
But it's difficult to
It looks like Canyon Road. Bingo.
It's difficult to quantify such a thing because each piece of land is different.
Right. So that's why I asked.
I couldn't do 30% green, let alone a larger percentage of that.
Okay.
Can I ask an off-topic question, and since everybody else has gone off-topic a couple of times here? I'm not advocating this, but if the city had the funds to build another water tank to store water, would we have enough water rights shares, or could we pump enough water to fill it? And where I'm going with this is, although I want to keep everybody's lawns green, but I'm more concerned about drought and drinking water. Like, you know, if we have no water to drink in our city, it might be nice to store some more water. I'm just curious if we even have enough water to... Is there enough water to pump? Do we have excess water in the city?
Put it in there. There is excess. The city does have maintain a little bit of excess water in their portfolio. But that's not to say we want to fill a tank and use it that way.
So we have water to fill a tank is all I'm asking.
And I say the reason that is the case is because Cottonwood Well was designed to be exactly that redundancy tank, mm-hmm. or the redundancy well. And it really is not a redundancy. It's a necessity now, like I right. said before.
We don't have a redundancy well anymore.
We don't right. have a redundancy
well. So what's changed from prior to the drilling of that well?
What's changed?
Yeah. Because that well's not only been there for years.
The addition of all the Manila residents, which was about 150 homes, and they're big lots too.
Big lots.
They're really big lots. And in the city, those are actually the biggest lots in the city. You are mostly in the R1 20,000, which is the 20,000, so about a half acre lots. There has been other developments in the city.
So you don't get any water out of the old Manila, the two Manila wells?
I'm sorry, say it again?
We don't get any water out of the two Manila
no.
wells?
No, those are all Pleasant Groves. So
who made that deal?
Yeah.
Not me.
Those wells are both in Cedar Hills.
That was a bad deal.
Long story. So the answer is yes, right? If we built another well, we could fill it. I mean, another tank, we could fill it.
You can fill it, but I don't think it addresses any of the problems.
Well, we can't push any more water through the PX system than we already are. We don't have the capacity.
I'm just referring to 5 years from now, we have no water to drink, and we're all thirsty. It'd be nice if we had a tank for that bad year or whatever it is. I'm just looking for emergency preparedness.
I think in that situation, we would just no longer put Cottonwood Well water into the PI system.
Yeah.
We would only use it for culinary water as a backup instead.
If it got to that point, obviously your drinking water is more important than your deep emerald green lawn.
Well, that's debatable. wasn't there like a pump break 4 or 5 years ago, and it was like 2 weeks where there was no irrigation?
Yeah.
It was like
could have been
8 years ago.
Yeah.
I heard rumors of this, and it...
PI system's only been up since 2009.
It almost didn't.
But if it was still the pump feeding into the culinary, I would hope that didn't happen, because back then, if a pump broke and
there was only the Harvey
the irrigation well. Was the culinary water, that would also be your house water, so I would hope that there wasn't 2 weeks without water.
It wasn't
I don't know. I'm not
like
familiar with that.
Maybe the legend has grown.
And the tank,
it was 2-3 days.
And the tank didn't even run down.
So when that happens, we can we the city's up and running, going to fix that problem, just like a water leak in the street. If a pump goes down, we're fixing it. However, and some people, the solution is let's drill a new well. There's no promises when you drill a new well that you're going to get
water.
Your gallons per minute.
Yeah,
you may get 100. You might get 1500.
Well, not where we are, though.
And where we are, the other problem is finding a spot for that well. We're up on the bench here, and then down below there's so many straws in the drink, and that water table is just coming down lower and lower and lower. Hence, we're looking at options to conserve water, like xeriscaping. I can bring that back.
But the... So I guess I'm still going, because when I was sitting in, when the city council was debating the Cottonwood Well, you know, like you said, that was planned as a redundancy.
Mm-hmm.
So the city was operating exclusively on the Harvey Well.
It
and
was
some CUP water.
Yeah, the city does receive some CUP water from the turnouts on the south and the north.
But apparently that's very expensive water.
It is very expensive water. We try to use that one as the last measure, just because it is very pricey.
So does the American Fork River water go to the golf course?
No. The golf course is, the golf course gets pumped down into pond 18 down here, and that's the irrigation water that feeds the golf course. But I mean, really, the American Fork irrigation at the weir there, getting it diverted into Cedar Hills, we get some earlier in the season, as I recall, but as the season goes on, our shares dry up, and other people's shares take priority.
Yeah, I imagine we have a pretty young share, not a.
Yeah, so it really goes to American Fork. So, so we don't get access to the American Fork River water very long, as I recall.
I think David said it's maybe a month.
Yeah, it's really early in the season when we may not even need that because the turnout or the runoff is so high that if there's just so much water and they're willing to divert it anywhere they can get it out to.
Right.
But once the water levels come back down, those with the oldest shares, they're the ones that
sure.
get that water. So.
And I believe that other, in addition to, we took on the Manila water users, we've had additional growth. And of course, just installing the PI system. Before, when you watered with culinary water, it was expensive, so people were paying for what they use, and now you get as much water as you want for the same money.
It's the only utility where you get as
much as
you want.
Charged by the color of the lawn?
What's that?
You're charged by the color of the lawn. I keep mine a pale brown.
Problem with that is some people think that the more water you throw at your lawn, the greener it'll be. So.
They'd be right. It's about nitrogen. Yeah, we can talk about some ideas maybe. But
as far as xeriscaping, when we come back next month, is there anything that stood out to you that said, I like this, I'd like to see this in our city code, or should I just go out on a limb and draft some code and send it out to you in an email and have you review it and give me your opinion? I mean, I really would like to come back with something that I don't want to say it's the final say in it, but that because by the time the watering season comes in, I'd like to be close to implementing this code.
I don't know. I'm more of a hands-off. I'm like, if it's not ugly.
Okay.
I guess you can't say that. But some people can do a great job on their own.
Yeah.
Without a landscape architect, and some people it's just rock. So I don't know how you, I don't know. You get.
Okay.
Going to be tricky for you, but I think you can do it.
Chandler, I would suggest that you not only review our neighbors' policies, but look at some people who are in serious water situations. Look at the how Tucson turned their water usage around from 300% to 25% of the state average, and places that in California where they've had a drought for a number of years. We used to have to put bricks in our toilets so that our flushes were just adequate to clear the bowl. All of those things. I lived through a 7-year drought in California, and we will have that situation here. I love our environment because we have three running wells or three running springs in our neighborhood. They run all year, but they run profusely during the summer. When people water their emerald green lawns, we have plenty of water for an emergency situation. But the point is that we're just not being efficient in how we use. And there is an example of a city who turned around the city that was already developed and had a water policy and a water system, and they were able to move it from. To a xeriscape city, and it's adequately beautiful for a desert community, and it's blistering hot down there. And there are a lot of plants. Someone made the comment that they didn't know anything about xeriscaping, but we have two conservatories, one in Provo and one up in South County, South
Jordan.
In Jordan, yeah, West Jordan or
West Jordan or South Jordan.
But it's up there, and they have all the native plants that work. Frankly, it doesn't have to be limited to native plants, although that's an attractive way to go. A lot of plants are water economic.
It really depends on the user.
They don't necessarily grow here. But they're. So,
I can attest to that, by the way. I have three trees in my backyard from Texas that I'm supposed to grow here, and they don't use much water, and they're thriving.
And so, yeah, and right now they don't use any. I mean, it's, once you get them established, a tree doesn't take very much
water.
The first 2 years, you water the heck out of them, but after that, the root system takes over, runs through your basement.
Into your sewer.
Into the sewer.
All right, well, I'll put something together.
I'm being facetious, but really, take a look at people who have had to deal with...
Well, I think that goes beyond just xeriscaping. I think that in our efforts to continually inform residents, we need to look at what other communities that have been successful in reducing their water usage have done and try to implement those some of those same measures.
You're going to create some interesting problems if you set percentages, also in my opinion.
Okay.
And do not require landscape.
I heard that one loud and clear. Loud and clear.
Any other comments? If not, this was just for discussion only. We'll move on to item number 9. Discussion on the guidelines for design and pre-review of the planned commercial development projects.
Chairman, can I make a motion? May I make a motion?
It is, I hope so. Yes.
I know we're moving at a snail's pace, but I make a motion or move that we table number 9 to a future meeting to be determined.
Do I hear a second on it?
Any discussion?
Second and then a discussion. Okay. Do I hear a second?
I'll second his motion in order to facilitate some discussion.
Okay, discussion? Questions?
You know, as he pointed out, we have been moving along at a maybe not a snail pace, but certainly a turtle pace. I wonder if this wouldn't yield to some sort of a work meeting schedule where it was the just only item on the agenda and we actually did our homework and came with the marked up copies of the guidelines chapter by chapter.
Okay. It's an interesting thought. My thoughts are that I would like to get this to the City Council as soon as I can.
I agree with that, but this is a process that sometimes takes a year.
It's a process, and it's been a process, and it's always the last one on the agenda because there's typically other things that are on the agenda that are a little more time-sensitive, or somebody's here to discuss them. So this kind of gets bumped to the end of the agenda, and on a late night, I don't even know what time it is right now, but once 9 o'clock hits, this one's quickly to get tabled. So if it's palatable to have a special meeting, then
I think that's a great idea.
Where this is the only item on the agenda, and everyone, like you said, does their homework and comes with a list of concerns and proposals, and we plow through it in one evening, I'm game.
Plow through part of it in one evening, most likely. But
say it again.
Probably not the whole thing in one evening, but we could accelerate it anyway. I imagine. Yeah. Catch up or
work session. Bring your books and circle up the horses.
Yeah, and we just gabble about stuff. We just that's part of why we go so slow.
The thing is, it becomes less relevant the longer we process it.
I think it's always going to be relevant, though.
We're running out of land.
We are running out of land, but it is still very important on the other. I know Reinhardt Oil still owns some property there that needs to be developed, as well as the city's 9 acres. And honestly, those are the most intense uses of the land down there. So I think that if there were any changes that need to be made, sooner the better.
Well, that's my feeling on it.
Any other comments? We have a motion on the floor that has been seconded. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion passes. I think it's a great idea that we set up a work session.
If there is a work session at the next meeting an hour before, would we have people come?
An hour before.
We could do it an hour after. Do you want to do it an hour after?
I'm just kidding. No, let's just pick a nice day and evening and all of us come.
Okay.
So, to one point I would make is, you know, our evening was spent entirely on discussion items, which doesn't really move anything forward either necessarily in many ways. And almost like if we had left discussion items, we probably could have got to this item. I mean, I don't know. It'd be nice to actually discuss preliminary, or it just sometimes I wonder if we discuss things too much for the sake of discussing. But just an observation. I mean,
I like to have a discussion. Me personally, I like to hear the discussion rather than me coming with the Zeroscape code and saying, here's what we're proposing. I'd rather have your input on it.
Well, that's a first, so topic. Rather, that's rather a first have, topic item. I'm talking about repeat offenders. If you will. I mean, some items we've discussed.
Why not?
So, I don't mind discussing new topics.
Well, there are some other ways to approach it. We can assign. This is the first planning commission I've been on that doesn't write their own ordinances. We could assign sections of this ordinance to individual councilmen and let that councilman do the research and support the discussion on that particular item. Commissioner, sorry. I did write one ordinance for the city of Cedar Hills a long time ago when we had a professional planner. But that's another way to approach this, is to actually write some words down.
Did we cover number 10 yet?
We're adjourned already.
We're adjourned already?
Okay.
Yes. I fell asleep there for a second. I lost track of that.
We had a motion to adjourn.
We had a second on it, and we voted on it.
That was to table.
We haven't had.
Yeah, that was table number 9.
That was the table number 9.
Yes.
I wasn't listening to the motion. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
Do I have a second?
Can't vote.
Don't look at us.
What?
Don't look at us.
I second the motion.
We have a motion. You second it.
Good. Go on.
All in favor? Aye.
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 We adjourn.
Yeah.